We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today on The Timeline, we recap the news. We talk the best and worst free agent options, and we make our predictions. Let's go. My name is Mike, and welcome to The Timeline, a Phoenix Suns podcast. Sam Cooper, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Mike. How about you?
Doing pretty good. How are you feeling about the draft that was the last episode? I know we're all kind of in the afterglow of the NBA draft. How are you feeling about that? Still happy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The draft last week was absolutely great. You know, we had our episode a few days ago with our reactions, and I think we were both pretty much buzzing with happiness after that draft. Still, this is like the craziest part of the off season. So I guess you always look forward and, you know, start thinking about free agency too. But that we can always remind ourselves, no matter who the Suns sign in the upcoming weeks, that at the end of this off season, we'll have DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges, not to mention Elia Kobo. So a lot of bright spots as we look ahead to the upcoming season.
I don't know about you, but I've been actually pretty surprised of a lot of Suns fans' reactions to the Mikal Bridges trade. A lot of people felt that was an overpay, which I guess you could kind of defend, you know, you can kind of defend that opinion. Maybe it was a little bit of an overpay, but Mikal Bridges is such a good fit next to Devin Booker. I was surprised that so many fans were so mad at McDonough for trading that pick.
Yeah, I think he's exactly the type of fit that we needed on this team, given his three-point shooting and his defense. Ultimately, no one's going to be able to really judge this trade until like 2023. So check in with us in 5 years if this podcast is hopefully still going, which we intend for it to be. And talk to us then about evaluating that trade a couple years after that 2021 pick conveys, and we can see who the Sixers end up taking with that pick.
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate judge of it. Now, we want to talk about, before we get into anything, we do have a Twitter account. I keep forgetting to mention it at the beginning of the podcast. It is The Timeline Pod. Please follow us on Twitter. We've been posting a lot of interesting stats and other interesting things. We'd like to have interaction with people that are listening or just people that are Suns fans in general. So find us, The Timeline Pod. Hopefully we can be an entertaining enough follow. At the very least, you're going to get some more Suns stats in your feed, in your timeline there. So give us a follow, interact with us, tell us you like us, tell us we suck, however you want to feed it. So next thing I want to go into, there's actually been a lot of news this time of year. So we're going to go into a new segment. We're going to call it The News. All right, first news item. This one is by Shams Sharania. That's right, ShamWow. Sham said, the Phoenix Suns and number 31 overall pick Elie Okobo of France have agreed on a four-year, $6 million rookie deal. League sources tell Yahoo. Okobo's deal will be guaranteed in the first two seasons with a team option in years three and four. $6 million contract for a second round pick. That's a pretty massive deal for a second round pick. What do you think of that deal?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I love it personally. $6 million overall over those 4 years. Just judging from that tweet, we don't know exactly where, like, what the start and end figures are there. So I don't know how much he's starting with. It may be as little as like $1 million in year one with then, you know, incremental increases. But yeah, I mean, I like that we're showing this long-term commitment to Elie Okobo's development. There are hopes that he could be, I don't think anyone should expect him to be our long-term starting point guard, but he's going to come in to the season and really have an opportunity to play a lot, I think. And I don't know how other Suns fans feel. I don't know how you feel even necessarily about Brandon Knight's capabilities of returning from this injury and immediately being a capable starting point guard, but I have my doubts, and I believe that if we actually go into next season with Brandon Knight as the opening day starter, there will be plenty of opportunities for Elie Okobo to maybe encounter some issues at first, but eventually start out playing him at least within the next couple of years and have his fair share of looks in terms of playing with Booker in the backcourt. So I think it's great showing the long-term commitment.
I think it's great too. I think an important part to talk about is that he was still under contract in the French team that he was on, so we kind of had to pay a little extra to make sure that he comes over. I don't think there was ever any doubt when they picked him that he would be playing in the NBA this coming season, but you kind of do have to pay for that. We saw the Kings paid Bogdanovich a massive deal just to get him to come over, and I think this is a similar thing, maybe overpaying a little bit to ensure that he comes over next season. I think it shows how much faith McDonough has in this pick. They seem to be really, really happy with it. They're paying for it. They're paying to get him out of his deal, and they're giving him a pretty good contract right up front. So that's our takes. There's also some other takes that I saw online. Kevin O'Connor, Kevon, as we've called him. He did have a take I saw on Twitter. That's a big deal for a second rounder, he said, and well worth it. I'm still surprised he slipped. Elie Okobo was my 18th ranked prospect, and that may end up looking too low. So Kevin O'Connor, Kevon, thinks that maybe he should have been picked a lot higher. Most draft boards had him a lot higher. So this is getting me pretty excited about that. Now, the next thing, Dave King.
Is this your king?
Yeah, that's right. That's a new drop. Dave King.
Is this your king?
Before we even get to what Dave King said, did you see Dave King accidentally call it DeAndre Ayton Joel?
I was saying that should be the real drop for Dave King.
I really like...
No, I mean, Dave's a great guy. He's done such a good job covering the Suns for so many years. And it's almost sad that that's like what... That Suns fans have been giving him a hard time about that over the past few
years. I really like Dave King.
But the reactions that DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges, even Elie Okobo, were giving him when that slip-up happened, that was hilarious.
It kind of lets you know their personalities a little bit. DeAndre Ayton did not like it, which I really like. You know, why would you want him to like being called the wrong name, but especially someone who was talking shit on Twitter to him. But Mikal Bridges thought it was hilarious, which I thought it was hilarious. I was actually listening live as it happened, and I felt awkward just listening to it. I can't imagine how Dave King felt. I really like Dave King. I didn't want to call him out by playing a drop of him making a mistake every time we talk about him. So I took the Black Panther clip instead. But Dave King...
Is this your king?
Has stated that Okobo will play in Summer League. So there wasn't any assurance that he would be in the NBA at all at first. We kind of assumed he would. Now we know he will be. We know how much money he'll be making as long as he makes it through all 4 years of his contract. And we know he'll be in Summer League. I'm pretty excited to watch him in Summer League.
Yeah, Summer League should be fun. Starts, what, in a week and a half?
Yeah, July 6th.
July 6th. Not,
well, yeah, 2 weeks, basically.
We get to see our new point guard in action a little bit, and there's, you know, I don't believe there's been any word on Josh Jackson playing yet. He might do the Devin Booker thing that Devin Booker did after his rookie year, right, where he plays a couple games, but not all of them. But potentially, if all of the Suns, like, first and second year players are actually in the roster, we should win. I really think we should win this.
I would hope so. The rumors were that Josh Jackson was going to play. Those were probably unfounded rumors that I saw on Reddit. So who knows how true it is, but I'm hoping that it's true. Imagine seeing a Kobo, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges all playing together. That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, it definitely does. And we get to see some of that athleticism on display. So, yeah, no word about who's coaching them either as of now, I believe. But definitely look to more updates from us in the future about that. And I'm really looking forward to watching Summer League once free agency gets going in about a week.
Yeah, and I don't think I've said it yet, but I'll be at Summer League this year. So if you're going to be there, hit me up on Twitter or Reddit, and maybe we can get some clips to put on the podcast. I'm excited to watch this team in person. I'll be there the 6th and the 7th for the first two games. All right, the next news item, the great Scott Bordeaux.
Great Scott!
He reported that Tyler Ulis's guarantee date, which was supposed to be today, the day we're recording this is Sunday the 24th, was pushed back to June 30th. So they punted. They're not letting us know what's going to happen with that contract. I was actually waiting to record this until after we found out if Tyler Ulis was guaranteed or not. This is kind of a weird situation. What do you think about this?
Well, here's what we know. Right now, the Suns have more players on the roster than they have available roster spots, and that's even before free agency started. We also know that the Suns are interested in being at least somewhat aggressive in free agency, according to some reports. We'll talk more about that in a minute. So if the Suns want to make any moves, got to make cuts. And, you know, it's, I guess, a little confusing to me that they'd punt on this. It's a hard decision, definitely, but it's just going to have to be made before July 1st. Out of that group of Shaquille Harrison, Davon Reed, Tyler Ulis, and Alan Williams even, you could make the argument that one or two of those guys, Alec Peters as well, that's a name that I forgot, definitely one or two of those guys is going to have to go. You have other guys like Daniel House. I think there's about a 0% chance of Daniel House coming back. So a lot of our sort of depleted second unit that we were rolling out for the second half of last season is potentially going to be gone next season in favor of these shiny new rookies and maybe a couple free agents.
The 6:30, the June 30th date, is interesting to me because it is the day before free agency begins. And as you know, for free agency, you're not supposed to have any meetings with agents or any players until after that July 1st date. As we know, things happen because July 1st at midnight, the minute it strikes July 1st, Woj is dropping bombs all over us, telling us exactly who's signing where. They're not even supposed to be having conversations yet, and yet all these teams know who they're signing. So the 6:30 day is interesting. It kind of gives me a hint that the Suns are maybe going to have some conversations with agents or players a little before they're supposed to, or maybe it's trade related. Maybe they pushed it back to that date to see if they can get some trades in before free agency starts, and they want to know what kind of point guards we're going to have on our roster before they sign Ulis to that deal. Now, it would just be, for those who don't know what we're talking about, Ulis has a year left on his contract. It's a guaranteed, it's a non-guaranteed year. It's actually 2 years of non-guaranteed years. They can agree that he's part of the team for this year. He'd make, I believe, $1.5 million, and that they decided to not let us know yet. So soon we'll find out about that. It's actually not that far away, and we get to know exactly what's going to happen with Ulis. On our last episode, we talked about if we had to choose between Shaquille Harrison or Ulis, both Sam and I thought Shaquille, but there's complications with Ulis. He's Devin Booker's best friend. It'd be hard to cut him.
Yeah, he is. He is Devin Booker's best friend. And, you know, unfortunately, I hope Devin is mature enough to realize that the Suns need to get better and that it's a business. But it's still a hard conversation to have if the Suns end up cutting Tyler Ulis. I'm sure Booker and other guys want him on the team. I'm sure he's a good guy to have in the locker room, to say the least.
Maybe they should just offer Devin Booker and Tyler Ulis a joint contract where they get to decide how much they split the money up between the two of them, and then promise them that they'll play together forever.
That's an ingenious idea. I'm almost surprised that we haven't tried that before.
I just thought of it. I don't know. All right, another news item from the great Scott Bordeaux. He also said that McDonough said the Suns would be aggressive in free agency. Now, we saw that McDonough also said we would be aggressive in the draft, and that turned out to be true. We traded what is apparently the most valuable asset in the NBA, according to all national media outlets now. Stop. With that Miami pick, even though Miami's good every year and always makes the playoffs and has one of the best coaches and GMs.
Did you know that because of the end of the one and done rule in 2021, that draft class is going to be eight times bigger
than twice the size? It will be amazing. It Everyone keeps
getting
knows.
Bigger. 16 yeah. times the size your average draft class. It's
better than ever seen before.
Bound to draft all-stars 1 through 45.
Yeah. It's the most valuable asset now. But they were aggressive. I mean, we can agree with that. I didn't think that pick would be on the table for anyone except for maybe Kemba Walker or a bigger trade. I'm happy it happened, but the aggressiveness was there. And now we know that aggressiveness will also be there for free agency. He also said that we want to target a veteran point guard and a stretch four. Stretch four, I think, was an interesting thing that he said. It wasn't just a power forward. He wants a power forward that can shoot threes.
Anthony Tolliver and Channing Frye are both free agents, by the way. I can think of no better stretch fours if that's all you're looking for.
Sell me on Channing Frye. I love Channing Frye.
Yeah, no, I don't want Channing back. I've had enough with Dudley. I mean, I love Channing, but, you know, we'll talk about our other options in a few minutes.
Well, I will say Channing Frye stays in shape. I mean, I love Jared Dudley too, but he's looking kind of thick. All right, yeah, so
I
now
mean, we're gonna... I don't even know what to say to that.
You can pretend like you didn't notice, but we've all noticed. So free agency, now that we're getting into that free agency conversation, we're going to have to break that down. Let's get into a segment I'm calling The Breakdown. All right, free agency is a massive conversation. So we're going to try and split this up into a couple of digestible sections here. First thing I want to talk about, to me, the most important deal that we need to get done this offseason, you can all guess it. Of course, it is Shaquille Harrison. No, I'm just kidding. It's Devin Booker contract extension. Devin Booker is eligible for a contract extension on July 1st. We can sign him. The contract extension actually wouldn't kick in until the 2019-2020 season, but he can sign it as early as this year. If he does not sign an extension, he becomes a restricted free agent. We will match whatever he gets, but he has the opportunity.
I mean, that's nothing to worry about.
Yeah. We're not losing Devin Booker in any way, but we have the opportunity of locking him down now, long-term. I think it's a priority for the Suns. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I just said we have nothing to worry about if he becomes a restricted free agent, but I think it's just a show of good faith. Offer him the max contract now. I don't think there are any Suns fans out there that would seriously deny that he's worth it. We recognize it's a lot of money. It's $157 million over 5 years. That's a ton of money. With the reality of the new TV deal in the NBA is that salaries have exploded over the past 5 or 10 years, and young players are eligible to make this type of money now. But Devin Booker has the potential to be in the pantheon of Suns greatness, up there with Steve Nash and Charles Barkley. I absolutely believe that at this point. So I think committing to him, giving him those extra 5 years on his deal now, and just trying to build towards the future is the best thing before we make any other moves.
That's exactly right. Now, Devin Booker, he makes $3.3 million next season, so for the 18-19 season. And his extension, when it kicks in, would give him a $23 million raise. And we would go up to $26 million in the 19-20 season. And that would only go up to $28, $30 million, $32 million, and up to an even higher amount in that last year, close to $35 million. So it's an important thing to understand. Of course, we have to do this. The Suns have to sign him to an extension, assuming he's wanting to do it. And I think he is. There was a funny thing that happened in our exit interviews this year. They were interviewing Marquise Chris, and he said something about how Devin Booker is going to be buying him dinners as of July 1st. So I think there's an assumption that Devin Booker is going to sign that deal. But it also puts a lot of money on the cap for future years, over $30 million. In future seasons. So that's a lot of money. I think he's worth it. He's our franchise cornerstone. We have to prove to other players around the league that we're willing to invest in our stars. So it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, not a question about that.
So that'll happen. I imagine we'll get some news about that July 1st. Sometimes they move off the signing date to a future date. So they're saying, yes, he's going to sign, and then they wait a week or two to sign him when they kind of maneuver the cap. Because if we do sign a free agent that puts us over the cap in a future year, because Devin Booker is a player the Suns drafted, we can actually sign him to go above the cap in future years. So that's something that can happen. Now, I want to talk a little about free agency as a whole. Now, we heard that McDonough wants to look for veteran point guards and a veteran stretch power forward. Overall, what do you think should be important for the Suns in free agency?
I think this is ultimately going to be something that we probably agree with, but maintaining long-term flexibility while also showing a commitment to not tanking. And what I mean by that is we need to be targeting players that are actually good, particularly at the power forward position, where I don't want to spend another season watching Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris eat up all the minutes there and frustrate me, although I am hoping that they show, you know, some level of development. And the same with point guard. I don't want to see it like be exclusively Brandon Knight and Elia Kobo. So I want to bring in some veterans that are really going to force some development out of these guys and show some commitment to winning. We've talked about in the past, it doesn't have to be playoffs. It just has to be like 30 or maybe 35 wins would be a successful season next year for the Suns in my book. But at the same time, I think you don't want to make the wrong moves. You don't want to hand out a Tyson Chandler type of contract, in my opinion. That we did several years ago, where you're paying a guy who's already in his early 30s for the next 4 years, like $15 million each year.
Long-term money.
Yeah, I think it's a little easier to justify that long-term money if it's a young guy who's going to grow with your young core. And there are a plethora of restricted free agents who sort of fall under that umbrella that we can talk about. But yeah, overall, I think like if you could maybe give some veterans 1 or 2 year deals, maybe 3 year deals, but mostly 1 or 2 year deals, maintain that long-term flexibility, have some cap space a couple summers from now when you're trying to add to a Devin Booker, a Josh Jackson that are more in their prime by then. That would be what's best for the Suns going forward.
Maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid of the timeline, but any long-term money scares me. Even young players actually kind of scares me. And the reason I say that is because I look at the timeline kind of versus the process. The process was the first thing that we saw, the 76ers, what they did, losing on purpose kind of for years and years and years to get the highest draft picks possible and then hope that they have a team that makes sense over time. And the 76ers are in a really interesting place right now in that they just made the playoffs with their young guys as their stars. And now they have a massive amount of cap space because most of their best players are still on rookie contracts. And it kind of sucks that Devin Booker, we didn't do that this last season because Devin Booker's extension kicks in next year. But after next season, if the Suns really show promise with all of their young players, Josh Jackson could have a breakout year. DeAndre Ayton could win rookie of the year. Mikal Bridges could be the perfect fit. If everything works, the attractiveness of the Suns as a destination will go up a lot next season. So the idea of signing players now, it's just a little scary. You know, obviously in the draft, you take the best player available, but with free agency, you kind of look for the best fit available and choosing the best fit now before we see all of these players play together. It's difficult. Obviously we can make some assumptions based on how they play. It's just a little scary for me. It's not to say that I don't think that we should sign any free agents, although I wouldn't mind watching this team as constructed, but maybe that just shows how used to losing I am. But
yeah, we're bonafide losers at this point. I think that definitely shows.
Yeah, but it's just an interesting, I'm a little scared of it. Now I want to break down the actual Suns cap situation. So this can get a little boring, but we got to get into the numbers in some detail here in order to cover it. The Suns are actually projected above the cap next year with all the current cap holds. So there are some players that are free agents. What a cap hold is, it's the assumption that a player is going to get a raise. And until the Suns renounce the rights to free agents, either restricted or some agent free agents are non-restricted and still have cap holds, until they renounce the rights, that's not free cap space. They can't use that cap space to sign other players. They do have the ability of renouncing rights and still re-signing players afterwards. But that's possible. But we have a couple free agents that we have heard some news on. The expectation is the Suns are going to renounce Alex Len and Elfrid Payton. Now, we haven't talked much about Elfrid Payton. Neither of us are huge fans of Elfrid Payton and how he played over the last few months of the season. But it sounds like he is no longer going to be a Sun, no matter what. Now, if we renounce both of those players, that will create about $10 million in space up front. What do you think about renouncing Alex Len and Elfrid Payton?
Necessary. Completely necessary. I'll start with Elfrid Payton. I just don't really think he contributes. Well, we haven't seen him play with his new hair yet, right? Like his hair blocks his face. Maybe he'll make more layups.
40% three-point shooter.
100% three-point shooter starting next season. I could see him going to the Spurs and being God knows what, Oscar Robertson. But overall, I think Elfrid Payton doesn't contribute to winning basketball. I don't think he really showed the effort on defense. He can't shoot. And I don't think that's necessarily something that's going to be like an indictment of him for his entire career. He could still potentially carve out a role as a solid guy. I look at a guy like Sean Livingston on Golden State, who has a few rings now, or a couple rings now, and he can't shoot, but he gives effort on defense and was able to carve out that role as a role player. I think Elfrid Payton could do that somewhere down the line as well. He just needs to be able to either make rapid improvement really fast and become a starting caliber guy.
I don't know.
I mean, I think if he swallows his pride and is just willing to accept a benching, he could still contribute for a good team. He just can't be a starter. He's not going to be a starter on a good team. His entire career is just going to be him. If he's starting, it's going to be on lottery teams like us.
After the Eric Bledsoe experiment, I don't want to watch another point guard that's inconsistent in effort and in play. It's just so frustrating. We're the Suns. We're used to watching amazing guard play for years and years and years and years. And I'm glad to see Elfrid Payton go. I don't think that it's impossible for him to be good. I think it's possible for him to be good in the future, but there are things that have to change. He has to get better at shooting, and his effort has to be more consistent on offense and defense. There are times where he does not drive to the basket at all, and his defensive effort wanes entirely, as does any player that played on the Suns for the last few years. Maybe that's not his fault. I didn't watch him that much in Orlando. But
I mean, Mike, don't you think that's where culture comes into play? Like, I'm talking about Sean Livingston. You know, you go to Golden State, you're coached by Steve Kerr, you're with all these superstars. The bar is raised. There's a certain level of expectation. And to some level, I agree with the notion that the Suns were tanking at the end of last season. How do you expect Elfrid Payton to, be going out there and giving it his all?
Right.
Obviously, I don't agree with that, because you have a guy like Shaq Harrison who's giving it his all because he was playing for a paycheck. Elfrid obviously wasn't paying for a paycheck. Otherwise, I think we would have seen better out of him. But the culture is real, and culture makes a difference. And I think when it comes to us trying to sign a lot of these free agents, especially the higher level ones, I don't know at this point what sort of culture we're going to be able to sell them on. I mean, it's just not a high point for us right now. We're trying to build that culture from the ground up starting this season with our new coach, our fancy new prospects, but it's not there yet. And there are a lot of other teams that these players could choose if they're looking for like a good culture with a good track record when it comes to development.
Well, the other side of that is the end of the Alex Len experiment. And I don't know about you, but I'm pretty excited to see that. And it's been a very frustrating development process for Alex Len. He has trouble catching the ball. He's inconsistent. His defense has been good over, some stretches of the season. He's been injured. But that's no more. Alex Len, no more. What do you think about Alex?
I like him, actually. I don't like him so much. I think it was necessary to renounce him because we're talking about the cap space right now. We wouldn't have had cap space if we re-signed Alex. At least not enough to really get anyone, worth it. So it was necessary to renounce him. That doesn't mean, however, that I'm conceding that Alex was a negative, because he wasn't. The honest truth is that Alex Len was one of our best players last year, whether you like it or not. His hands suck, but he's still a good rebounder. He's still a good defender. He still sets screens. He does things that matter on an NBA basketball court. And if we don't replace the types of skill set that he brings to the table, we don't replace that with some sort of trade or free agent, then it's going to make an impact on us next year. We're going to be a noticeably worse defensive team when it comes to like protecting the rim, when it comes to getting rebounds, because Alex Len legitimately provided that. And it is a sort of skill set that needs to be replaced. That doesn't mean I'm going to cry about the loss of him. It doesn't mean that I think he's going to go to another team and become a superstar. But I do think Alex Len leaving the Suns technically is a negative that needs to be righted. It's not all positives for us this offseason. We do have some outgoing talent that needs to be replenished.
Yeah, obviously we have DeAndre Ayton coming in. That's the real reason that Alex Len is 100% going to be gone. I don't think Alex Len is going to make a lot of money on his next contract, regardless of where he goes. And maybe if we did not pick, maybe if we went with Luka Doncic, there's a chance that Alex Len would have stayed in a Suns uniform. But the real truth of it is, what made Alex Len frustrating to watch is that there was potential there, and his defensive effort was relatively maybe the most consistent of any player on our team I don't think we've talked about it yet on the podcast, but the myth of Tyson Chandler's rim protection, he has not been a good rim protector. He's been terrible on the Suns as a rim protector. He's been a good rebounder. He sets fantastic screens and he rolls hard. Those are good skills. It's not that Tyson Chandler has been an overall negative for the team. I actually don't think that some of the best basketball we've played in the last season was with Tyson Chandler on the floor, but he was not protecting the rim. The only rim protector we actually had was Alex Lynn, and losing that will matter. And, you know, in a reduced role, maybe Tyson Chandler's defense will all of a sudden reappear. But I think the idea is that Tyson Chandler will be around to help develop DeAndre Ayton's defense. And maybe that'll be mentally more than physically, because Tyson Chandler, he just doesn't do it anymore. So losing Alex Lynn, that will matter for that. But there's another center we can talk about. So obviously, Alex Lynn, Payton, they're gone, according to Scott Bordeaux, actually.
Forget about them.
Yeah, they're gone.
Out of your mind.
Now, that's $10 million in space. That doesn't create much space to sign, not even maybe a mid-tier, lower-tier free agent. It's still not much space there. So we have to continue creating space. Now, the next one is
one-third of Carmelo Anthony, by the way. For those of you who need someone to put the math in perspective, $10 million is one-third of Carmelo Anthony's salary next season.
Oh, my God. I just shivered. You sent a shiver down my spine.
At least we're not them, right?
Well, they do have Russell Westbrook, which is also a very frustrating player to watch, actually. But the next guy that we probably are going to cut is, this one hurts. It's Big Sauce, Allen Williams, local stud.
Don't do it to me.
I don't want to. I'm a huge fan of Allen Williams. I think Allen Williams, one, he's been great on the court. You know, obviously he got injured this last year, which matters. That's an important part of this conversation. I think if he was not injured last year and proved that he could be an effective player going forward, this conversation could be different, but he didn't play much. He sets great screens. He's a huge body under the rim. He gets great rebounds. And the other thing is, people play harder when he's on the floor. There are certain kinds of players that bring up the energy of everybody else on the floor. And Allen Williams is one of those players. And the other thing too, and I know this is a little, you know, it's off the court, but I've been following very closely Brandon Knight's, recovery from his injury. And it seems like Allen Williams and Brandon Knight have bonded off the floor, and Brandon Knight has shown more pride in being a Phoenix Sun, maybe more perspective, of course, as we talked about on the last episode. Someone who's injured, you know, it gives you a lot of perspective. I'm just lucky to be here. I'm lucky to make millions of dollars playing basketball. But I think Allen Williams had a lot to do with that. And losing a player like that, someone who can kind of bring everyone together, make everyone feel like a family off the court, that's going to hurt. But he makes $5.5 million. He's on a non-guaranteed deal, and we could just cut him. And that would mean we'd be at, you know, $15.5 million, and now we're talking about a potential free agent that could make a difference. So we've got to lose Allen Williams, most likely.
Yeah, it's sad. It's just a reality that we would have to accept. I think we need to feel out the free agent market first and see if there's actually anyone who's going to want to sign with us. Well, obviously, there's another option that we could talk about, and that's like a team like Atlanta right now, for instance, that's just starting their rebuild and is going to go into next season with a lot of cap space, is potentially a team that would be willing to take an expiring deal like Tyson Chandler or Jared Dudley. I know we just talked about Tyson Chandler mentoring DeAndre Ayton, but potentially if you could find a partner that's willing to take that salary cap dump of Dudley or Chandler, and we attach a couple second round picks or maybe a first round pick, like the Milwaukee first round pick, to them, that's how you create cap space without letting go of Allen Williams. Or if you want to create so much cap space that, you know, you have that max contract flexibility and you can really go after one of the top guys in this class, not LeBron James, not Kevin Durant. Remember, we are the Phoenix Suns, so if you're thinking about those, just stop. But by top guys, I mean like Aaron Gordon, Clint Capella, Jabari Parker. Like, those are top guys. And I know they're not top guys, but if we want that much money, you could waive Allen Williams and then trade one of Dudley or Chandler, and you start to get into the figure of where we would need to be then.
Well, actually, so now that you mentioned that, if we waived Alex Lynn, Elfrid Payton, or we renounced them, and then waived Allen Williams, non-guaranteed, and then there's three more non-guaranteed contracts that we can get rid of fairly easily. Ulis, Shaquille Harrison, Davon Reed. Obviously players that played you may have heard our opinions on Shaq Harrison. We both really liked him, but it really doesn't make sense if we need that cap space. It makes sense to get rid of him, no matter how much it would hurt. If we did waived all of those players, that gets us to about $20 million in cap space. And that's actually not even enough for a max deal on somebody who is going into their second contract. Somebody like
Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's starting salary for a max contract for Aaron Gordon would also be like $25 million.
Yeah, it's $25.3 million, and it goes up from there. It's similar to what Devin Booker's is going to be like, but the projected cap for when Devin Booker starts next season is a little bit higher. So Devin Booker starts at 26.3, so a million more, and it would go up from there. It's a $148 million deal would be the max deal that you can get for Aaron Gordon. That's the max deal, I should say, that Orlando has the ability of signing him to. So that's a hugely expensive deal, and they can get that 5 years. We can get 4 years and offer it to him and you know, force their hand to sign him, but that's not enough to do that. So the only other way to create enough cap space to sign a player like Aaron Gordon or Jabari Parker is trading contracts into space for picks. So a team that has a lot of cap space, someone like Atlanta that you're talking about, can trade a pick, maybe like a protected second rounder. We can get rid of Jared Dudley or Tyson Chandler. They have enough cap space to absorb their deal, and then we take on no money back. That creates space. That's one of the options. The other option would be that, of course, they give back non-guaranteed deals that we could then waive, and then that would clear space. Or the other one other option, of course, is a sign and trade where, say, someone like Aaron Gordon could sign with Orlando and then trade for TJ Warren or Marquise Chris or some other players that would help create enough cap space to make enough space to fit Aaron Gordon's deal with the Suns. That gets a lot more complicated, and a lot of that depends on how interested those teams would be in any players on the Suns. So, you know, and keep in mind, unless we're talking about Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, all those other guys are just all those other guys. They're not exactly incredibly attractive trade pieces. I know that as Suns fans, we feel a little more protective of them, but even DeAndre Ayton called them all those other guys. So who knows how interested those teams would be in trading for those contracts.
There is one other option you're forgetting.
Oh, what is it?
Stretch provision.
Ah, yes.
You could waive and stretch Jared Dudley or Tyson Chandler. The way the stretch provision works, you take a player who's on, say, a one-year contract. You take all the money they're owed, and you still have to give it to them, but you give it to them in 3 years instead of one. If they've got 2 years left on their contract, they get it in 5 years instead of two, because the formula is twice the number of years plus one. Anyway, we did this with Michael Beasley back in the day, and you screw yourself over long term.
Another shiver down my spine.
Yeah, another shiver. That's my job. You really screw yourself over long term here. Instead of paying Jared Dudley $10 million in one fell swoop next season, we could waive and stretch him, only pay him $3.3 million next season, but then have to pay him $3.3 million the next 2 years after that as well. So, you know, you've got the ghost of Jared Dudley haunting you for the next several years while we're trying to be a good team. But it is a way to create fast cap space if you're really strapped for it, and if there's really a player we're in love with, that could be an option for the Suns as well.
Yeah, if there's a player that we're really in love with and no other teams are interested in any of our assets enough to give us the cap space, that would be the reason we could do that. The reason I didn't even think of that as a deal is, just as I talked about earlier, how valuable I think future cap space is going to be for us. The idea of paying Jared Dudley 2 years from now, I'm not a huge fan of that, but I do think that maybe if Aaron Gordon is a real possibility, that could be something that McDonough would do. Or yeah, the real person he would have to sell on it is our cheap owner, Robert Sarver.
Yeah, because every time you do that, you get closer to potentially having to pay the luxury tax in the future, and Robert Sarver is the type of owner where I don't think we'd be going into the luxury tax unless we're the best team in the league.
Yeah. All right, so there's a couple of guys. So we're going to talk about this free agency conversation in an interesting way. We're each going to choose in the two options that McDonough said we're looking at, which is a stretch power forward and a veteran point guard. We're each going to choose somebody that we want, and maybe somebody that we don't want. So we can choose the best scenario and maybe the worst scenario for each of those positions. But there's a couple players we want to talk about. Obviously, we talked about Aaron Gordon. Let's talk a little bit more about Aaron Gordon before we get to our choices here. Aaron Gordon, like we said, it's probably not possible without a sign and trade or trading some players for some cap space. His deal would start at about $25 million and only go up from there. Aaron Gordon has played every position, it seems like, on the roster on Orlando, but usually 3, 4, and potentially 5. He's young. He's still, I believe, 23. He's 6'9", 220 pounds, averaged 17, 8, and 2, shot 33% from three last year. It's the best percentage that he's shot in his career. It was in the 20s before that. So it's not exactly a great sign for the stretch part of the stretch four, but he did shoot 39% on catch and shoot threes and 37% from the corner. So depending on shot selection, and I imagine he was the guy with the ball in his hands at the end of the shot clock a lot in Orlando, so he's probably jacking up some threes in those scenarios. We have Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. He probably wouldn't be that here. But I imagine that shooting percentage from three, depending on how much you believe in his shooting, it could actually improve from that 33%. Do you believe in Aaron Gordon's shot?
No. Actually, well, it's not necessarily that I don't believe in Aaron Gordon's shot. It's that I think we have better options on our very own roster. My hot take when it comes to this is that I think if you gave Marquese Chriss 2 more years, he could be Aaron Gordon. It's just about waiting. Aaron Gordon, to break it down a little more, he shot, his true shooting percentage last year was 53%.
He's never had
a true shooting percentage above league average in his career so far through 4 years. And I think part of that plays into playing on a bad team where you get worse looks because you're kind of the star player. But this is a guy who I think his value tanked. Maybe it didn't tank with the market if, you know, someone's still going to offer him a max contract. But in my mind, at least, it tanked after the All-Star break. Because after the All-Star break, he was still putting up his counting stats. He still averaged 16-7, but he shot 41% from the field, 31% from three, and 65% from the free throw line. And folks, we're talking about a power forward here. 41 and 31 for a power forward, and the free throw shooting's bad too, but that's just terrible all around. And I think Marquese Chriss even beat those numbers in the second half of last season. Mm-hmm. So I think the plus side when you're talking about Aaron Gordon is defensive versatility, and he definitely has a lot of defensive versatility. Does he have so much defensive versatility that it's worth paying him $25 million a year over paying Marquese Chriss $3 million a year? No, I wouldn't say that at all.
Yeah, it's a little scary of a thought, and I think Aaron Gordon is a very likely player that we look at. Now, Aaron Gordon is a restricted free agent. We should mention that as well. That means that if we offered Aaron Gordon a max, one, we would have to trade some players to make that possible, or Orlando would have to agree to a sign and trade. If Orlando agreed to a sign and trade, obviously the Suns would be getting Aaron Gordon. But if they didn't, we traded other players for cap space, which we don't necessarily have to do before offering a contract. I believe we can renounce certain players and still sign them to an offer sheet. If we did sign them to an offer sheet, Orlando would then have 3 days to match that offer or choose to let him walk. Now, Orlando did just draft Mo Bamba. They drafted another big man. So there is a possibility that they don't let him walk. But Orlando, I just don't see it. I think they're going to match whatever he's offered. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they match whatever. I don't think Jonathan Isaac is ready to play. Yeah, Jonathan Isaac isn't ready to be the full-time four on that team next to Bamba, although that is a really long lineup. I think they're desperate and will probably match for Aaron Gordon.
It just makes sense. Now, I don't know why they have so many big men on their roster. That is an insane lineup. Orlando, I don't blame them for taking Mo Bamba. I think that that's a good pick. Mo Bamba could be really great. He's a very high potential prospect, but Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon, Mo Bamba, Bismack Biyombo, these are just a bunch of massive dudes, and they're not all going to get to play, and the less they play, the less their trade value is. But it does make sense for them to have good players. They have more flexibility in future deals. So if they do want to make some trades this year, having these players on contracts makes them potentially better assets. I don't know if Aaron Gordon $30 million a year is a great asset, but
that's not an asset as much as it's an atomic bomb. So,
well, Aaron Gordon, we should recap Orlando a little bit. When the season started, Orlando was good for a few weeks. Everyone was, you know.
Yeah, back when it was going to be the Magic and the Clippers in the finals, right?
Yeah, exactly. Magic and the Clippers is what we all thought was going to happen. And that was kind of a surprise. And I don't know, Orlando's kind of up and down and all over the place, and who knows what they're going to look like. I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden Dwight Howard was signing a deal to go back there and they had another center. They can do all kinds of different things, but I have a feeling that they're going to keep Aaron Gordon. The only way that we end up with Aaron Gordon on the roster is if they really like TJ Warren, for example, and we could actually move TJ Warren to get someone like Aaron Gordon on our roster.
If we're paying Aaron Gordon that much, then I don't think that's worth it at all.
I don't know that it is either. It depends. It's difficult. If you believe in Aaron Gordon's ability to improve his jump shot, then he could be a really, really, really valuable player in the future. But if you don't, if you don't believe in that, then that kind of says everything. That's really the beginning and the end of the Aaron Gordon conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, he's just the four. He's not the stretch. And if I'm paying $25 million, you know, you could be damn sure I want the stretch and the four. So,
yeah. So maybe the Aaron Gordon buzz, because there's been Aaron Gordon buzz for weeks. I think before even the end of the season, there was reports that the Suns were going to offer Aaron Gordon a max contract, or a near max contract, I believe is how it was worded. So maybe that's not real, because if we're going to take McDonough at face value, we're going to believe what he said about a stretch four. Either he believes that Aaron Gordon's a stretch four and has the ability of being a stretch four, or he's not interested in Aaron Gordon the way that things have been reported. Things are relatively secretive about McDonough. We didn't hear anything about the Mikal Bridges trade until it happened. We didn't hear anything about the Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris moves until they happen. So we'll have no idea until the last minute. Of course, there will be a ton of rumors coming out over the next few weeks. The other guy I want to talk about, this one's an interesting one, Jabari Parker. Now, Jabari Parker, power forward, played for Milwaukee, still currently playing for Milwaukee, another restricted free agent, but a more interesting restricted free agent because he's been injured. He played only in 150 games over four seasons in Milwaukee because of injuries. Now, some people consider this a high-risk signing. I consider it a high-risk signing. Some people consider it a low-risk signing because maybe he wouldn't be a max free agent because of those injury concerns. What do you think about Jabari?
As a player, I like Jabari, and I think he has a lot of potential maybe to fit in with the Suns. He has some bad tendencies that would have to be fixed by coaching. He only played 24 minutes a game this past season, right? So it's a big gamble, because if he gets injured again and isn't able to play full time, you know, then he's really not doing much. But with those 24 minutes a game this season, per 36, he averaged 19, 7, and 3 on 55% true shooting. Those are pretty good numbers. He averaged 20 points a game in a full-time role when he actually was playing like 35 minutes a game the year before. My question to you is sort of this thing that came out with Jabari. A reporter back in April, I believe, asked if it was true that the team had offered him an $18 million year extension, like 4 years, $18 million a year. So I guess that would be 4 years, mm-hmm. $72 million. He said, "I wish," was his response. So it all comes down to whether you believe him or not. But if you believe him, then I think there's a big difference between paying Jabari, who's admittedly a big risk, $18 million a year, if that's all it takes to get it done, versus paying Aaron Gordon $25 million a year. Because I think the high reward that potentially comes out of Jabari, I mean, that's another 20-point-per-game score, and he's a much better shooter when it comes to spot-ups. Synergy stats tracks, you know, these certain types of play types and shows how efficient players are in certain types of plays. When it comes to spot shooting, Jabari's pretty good. He's above average, 57th percentile in the league. When it comes to transition play, he's actually really good. He ranks in the 88th percentile because, you know, even if he's lost a step, he's still this athletic wing that could run the floor with Josh Jackson, Mikal Bridges, and Devin Booker. And that's, you know, offensively, I think he could really fit into this team.
It's all theoretical, though, because what if he just doesn't play?
Oh, it's
there's just a possibility that he can't play.
Yeah, if he doesn't play, then it's worse than getting Aaron Gordon, right? Because Aaron Gordon, if he's on the court, is probably a positive contributor most of the time. I mean, if he's shooting 40% from the field, then I really do think even that is suspect, but he's probably a positive contributor. And if Jabari's not playing, he's not playing. But do we have, you know, the ability to keep sitting this one out? Like, wouldn't you argue that we have to start taking risks eventually?
I could see that. I just think, well, we'll talk a little bit more soon, when we get into players we like and players we don't like, or players we want and players we don't want. But I just think that that might not be worth the risk there. Long-term money, I'm afraid of committing to long-term money. I'm a believer in the timeline. So signing a guy with injury, that large of injury risk, who could be potentially relatively expensive, it scares me a little bit. But I think he would be a great fit in a perfect world. Although his three-point shooting hasn't been all that great either, I think. Maybe he's not as stretchy as McDonough wants, or maybe McDonough was being a little vague in how stretchy he needs them to be, because Jabari Parker has high potential.
The truth is, if we want just like a pure stretch four, there are a bunch of cheap guys we could go for, but all the top power forward free agents in this class, I mean, Julius Randle, Derek Favors, Aaron Gordon, these aren't stretch fours. So when McDonough is talking about that, it almost also makes me think if he's considering a trade of some sort that we just don't know about.
You mean like a Kevin Love trade?
I mean, that's, I think, the first name that comes to people's minds, right?
Mm-hmm.
If LeBron leaves and Cleveland's blown it up. But, you know, maybe there are other guys out there, too. It's, you know, it's a shame that Nikola Mirotic has one more year left on his deal. I thought, like, when I was thinking, doing research before this episode, I was thinking he was about to be a free agent. And that would have been, like, especially with how he played in the playoffs, that would have been a perfect signing for us. But he has one more year left on his deal. So can't
the tank buster, like Nikola Mirotic, came back,
the tank
came back to Chicago. The Bulls won six in a row and changed their draft pick from potentially a top five pick to outside of the top five. And then immediately got moved.
He's just that good.
I like Mirotic as well. His shooting may be a bit of a myth as well, but that pump fake, man, it doesn't matter if you can hit the three, if people have to defend it regardless, because spacing matters as well. And he provides spacing even if he shoots 33 or 34% from three or whatever it was this last season. One more injured player I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Patrick Beverley. Now, Beverley only.
It's not even a free agent.
I know. But Patrick Beverley only played 11 games last season.
Have to insert Patrick Beverley into every conversation because I feel like he's the Suns. He's getting
he's
all the love
fit.
From Suns fans right now. The perfect fit. The glove.
Yes, he is. He had knee surgery, though. So I know.
No, maybe not. Maybe not that much of a glove anymore.
I know. But he's capable of shooting 40% from three. He is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA at the point guard position. He is on a non-guaranteed $5 million contract with the Clippers, and the Clippers just drafted Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jerome Robinson. They're both guards. Shai's a point guard. Jerome can play kind of both guard spots.
Jerome might not play anything in the NBA. I mean, God, that was a bad pick. But
I was shocked. Who, I think, is the reaction I heard in the arena. Who? Nobody knew who he was. If the Clippers waive Pat Beverley, which is possible, to me, I think they would want him on a $5 million contract, but maybe they're willing to trade him on that $5 million contract. Do you think the Suns would be interested? I think absolutely the Suns would be interested. I just, the likelihood of him being a free agent is what we're going to talk about, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a trade option, I think the Suns would consider Pat Bev. I'll indulge you. He's a good fit and he's got a good skill set. He would be good next to Booker.
And we have to talk about him because it's what Suns fans are talking about. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he's a great
Twitter,
defender.
It's talking
about changing the culture, right? And like, you know, the difference between him and a player like Marcus Smart is, first of all, I mean, I think Marcus Smart is a lot softer than he tries to portray himself as. And like Pat Bev strikes me as actually hard.
All right.
But I have a bit of a bias against Marcus Smart, but also mostly that Pat Bev can kind of shoot. And that's huge. How many players can actually play defense and shoot? And how many of those players are cheap and wouldn't cost that much in a trade like Pat Bev? You know, I mean, that really
some of them cost the Miami pick.
Yeah, I mean, so that says it all about Pat Bev. There's a reason to be interested.
Mm-hmm. Now, guards, let's just run through a couple players. We don't have to talk about them yet. Let's just list them out here. Marcus Smart, Zach LaVine is an option. Some people have written about Fred VanVleet. Dante Exum is another guard that's available.
Avery Bradley.
So these are all options. And then with the power forward, there's Derek Favors. He plays center and power forward. I think he's more of a center, but he can do a lot. He can't shoot, though, so I don't know if that he's going to be an option. Trevor Ariza, 32 years old. Jabari Parker, we talked about. Luke Mbah Mute, Luke Mbamute was injured in the playoffs. Didn't look very good on the floor, but still played. I got to give him credit for that, but it looks pretty bad. So it'd be interesting. I mean, I'm guessing that injury is not a long-term injury, so him being a free agent could be an option. Rudy Gay, that's kind of a, you know, option there. Ersan Ilyasova, that's a good one. You know, he played for Philadelphia. He's played on a couple winning teams. And Thaddeus Young. So there's a lot of options there. So
Thaddeus Young is the most, sorry, just to say one thing about Thaddeus Young, that's like the most non-imposing player in the entire NBA. Like, that's the
he's big though.
Oh, no, but I mean, like, he's easily the most forgettable guy. Like, Thad Young is the definition of an average starting, not starting, but just like an average fringe starter power forward. Like,
yeah,
he's been the same player 11 years straight, has always been on these teams that are mediocre. Like, he's just the definition of
He was on Indiana. Indiana was good.
For the East. I mean, would they make the playoffs in the West? But anyway, we'll move on. Maybe we'll touch on Thad Young a little bit more. But
now, who do you want to start? What position do you want to start with here when we talk about who we want and who we don't want?
Let's start with guard
or power forward?
Let's start with guard.
Okay, good. You go first. You can choose either one. We'll start with who you want or who you don't want, or you can go into both.
This isn't exactly a secret for those who have, like, followed me in the past, but here's the guy I want, is Fred VanVleet. I'll start by dropping a stat on you, okay? Out of the many, many dozens of lineups that played at least 300 minutes together, these five-man lineups in the entire NBA, the second-best lineup in the whole league, not among benches, but in the whole league, second-best lineup was the Raptors bench, which was VanVleet, Delon Wright, CJ Miles, Pascal Siakam, and Jakob Poeltl. A collection, a true potpourri of, at least by the eye test, mediocre talents, right? Was the second best lineup by net rating in the entire NBA. Again, this bench, a plus 17.1 net rating per 100 possessions. So, I mean, I think the natural question when you look at that, that lends itself to is why. And I think a lot of it has to do with the point guard abilities of Fred VanVleet. I'm also a big fan of Wright. So, like, if Wright came up in trade talks as a young guy, I would go after him too. Here's the thing about Fred VanVleet. We talked a lot in our draft episode, right, about how much we like switchable defenses and long wingspans and whatever. Fred VanVleet can't do that. He went undrafted because he's has no wingspan. And because he's, I think, 6 feet tall in the first place. Yeah, he's 6 feet. However, the guy can shoot the lights out. He shot 42% from three last year in his second season, playing 20 minutes per game. He had an assist to turnover ratio of over three. Basically, if we talk about our point guards wanting to do three things, right? You want them to be able to pass the ball effectively. You want them to, well, I guess this comes with it. You want them to pass the ball effectively. You want them to be able to defend, and you want them to space the floor. The reason Tyler Ulis is about to have played his last game as a Phoenix Sun is because he can only do one of those three things. Mm-hmm. If Tyler Ulis had a 40% three-point shot, then even with his lack of defense, I would be all aboard him, you know, as a backup point guard for the Suns because he could do two of those three things. Fred VanVleet, we sign him. He's not going to fix our defense, but he does those other two things so well in terms of shooting and taking care of the ball that he would improve our offense enormously. And I don't think it's even a stretch to say that if we brought in Fred VanVleet as the backup point guard next year behind Brandon Knight, with Brandon Knight having an iffy track record in the past and coming off an injury, there could be plenty of opportunities for VanVleet to steal that starting spot by season's end because he's only 23 right now and he could develop into a starting caliber point guard.
I like that. And, you know, I could see, you know, in smaller lineups, them even playing together. You know, Brandon Knight, we've done the experiment as a two guard and in some lineups, I could see Devin Booker playing three. We can play a small lineup. And yeah, I could see that. I like Fred VanVleet. I do have fear about any small point guard after watching these recent playoffs and finals, just the way they're abusing and just ISOing small players and trying to get them down into the underneath the basket, playing Charles Barkley ball up basically. But I think he would actually be a good fit, mostly because I don't know that he would be that expensive. I think that we could probably get him for maybe around, I don't know, what do you think, 10 million? 11 million?
I really think so. Yeah. I mean, he's a restricted free agent. I should have said that because he's a young guy. So Toronto could always match. And I don't know how they're feeling about him. They have Delon Wright, like, who can play point guard behind Kyle Lowry. They don't necessarily need VanVleet. but how willing are they going to be to give up the guy who, again, was like the leader of the second best lineup in the NBA, surprisingly, last season? I'm just not sure about that. But yeah, I mean, ideally, I'd be looking at $8 to $10 million a year. That's what I would hope for.
Yeah, I think that would probably... There's not a lot of teams with cap space this year. We didn't talk about that yet, but there's not a lot. I mean, that's one of the reasons it's going to be difficult for the Suns to clear cap space by making trades, is that other teams are going to be desperate for cap space. So, you know, it'll all depend on how valuable our assets are. Now, I have a feeling I can guess who you're going to pick as the player you don't want, but I'll let you introduce that.
He needs no introduction. If the Suns sign this player, then Ryan McDonough has officially been played. He will always be the apprentice and never the master. And that is because Danny Ainge will have finally fooled him one too many times. And of course, the player that I'm talking about is Marcus Smart, because he's the antithesis of everything that I was just talking about. He's a great defender. I'll give Marcus Smart that. He flops a little bit too much. But I just don't think the Suns can afford to bring in a complete non-shooter like that. A complete non-shooter at the guard position. I mean, if we bring in Marcus Smart, our point guards last year shot like what, a combined 25-30% from three? We can't fix that by bringing in Marcus Smart. He's not going to develop his three-point shot. I like Igor, but he's not, you know, he's not Brad Stevens, at least not yet. And I mean, I understand the arguments for why he could maybe work, but I just don't see how it would be worth the cost at all.
Well, my guard that I want and guard that I don't want, it's actually pretty easy. It's actually Marcus Smart for both of those options, because when I think about Marcus Smart, I do kind of think he's a great defender and a really great defender. He's one of the best in the league, of course, unless he's trying to guard Devin Booker. But he gets up into people. He can guard people that are bigger than him. He really annoys people in a way that championship teams need. They need a player that gets under people's skin. You know, you think about the Draymond Greens, Dennis Rodman is you know, one of the most famous ones. Every team that is a championship contender needs a player like that that can just piss off the other star player and maybe get them a little distracted. And I love that in him. And then, of course, there's the Igor move. Now, Igor is credited with helping fix Ricky Rubio's shot. Now, Ricky Rubio's shot, we'll see how consistent he is over the next season, but you did see a big improvement this last year, and he and Ricky Rubio himself gave a lot of credit to Igor for that. So in my mind, I'm thinking there's this great defender and we have this great player development coach that can help fix his shot. But also, he's so annoying to watch. It's so hard to watch him on a consistent basis. There's been a weird rivalry between the Suns and the Celtics over the last few years, and maybe that's subconsciously related to getting our general manager from them and the fact that they fleeced us on the Isaiah Thomas trade. But watching him play for the Celtics in that rivalry that we've sort of created, that is a little bit one-sided because they're so much more successful than us, it's been very frustrating. So I don't really want a player that flops all the time. I don't want a player who can't shoot. So as intellectually, it does not make sense as a basketball fit other than the defense. But as a dreamer, and also because I think it's kind of likely that we do actually sign him, I think that McDonough was there when he was drafted, and I think he might be a fan of him. Maybe I'm just trying to prepare myself for this being an actual likely possibility.
I think Boston, both their media and their fan base, do such a good job of spinning positive narratives around Celtics players when there aren't. I mean, Avery Bradley was one of the best defenders in the league until he left Boston. And he's still good, but he's not. He's lost a step. I guess you could blame some of that on age, but I think coaching has something to do with it. I also just have to echo the sentiment that, I mean, Marcus Smart, if we get him, and you're a Suns fan, you have to admit that he's a flopping bitch. You do. I mean, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you can't, like, hold yourself to this high standard of virtue. Like, you have to be like, this guy's kind of an asshole, but I'm going to root for him anyway. You just have to, and I'll do that. If we sign Marcus Smart, he has the benefit of pissing other players off. Is it because he plays the right way? No, not necessarily. Like, that's sort of what I was getting at earlier when I was like, I think he's softer than he gives off. Like, there's a way to play hard and there's a way to play soft, and flopping is soft. You know, it's bending the rules still. It's, you know, getting things to go your way. But Marcus Smart has been flopping incessantly since he was at Oklahoma.
It's very true.
So I guess we'll see.
So I want him and I don't. Now, let's move on to power forwards here. You know what? Go ahead and give me both of your options for power forward.
Yeah, one guy that's been linked to the Suns a lot in the past, and I think we could go for, is Derek Favors. Now, here's the caveat that I say with that. If the Suns sign Derek Favors, I think it's dependent on the Suns being able to convince Derek Favors to not take a starting role, which might nix it right there. Might mean that Derek Favors doesn't come to the Suns. But if we could do that, that would be great, I think. Because I think Derek Favors is a power forward in this stage of his career where the NBA is going as a non-shooter. He's a 20% career three-point shooter, and I don't really think you could pair him effectively with Ayton, who's another sort of non-shooter at this point in his career, well together. But if you could get Derek Favors to buy into this idea of being still like a 25-minute per game bench big and make him the first big to back up Ayton at center primarily, but then also give him some minutes at the four, that's where his real strength is. Because Derek Favors, his real strengths at this point, he might be undersized as a center, but he can rebound well. He's a really good at protecting the rim, and he's a rim runner. I mean, that's how he gets his points. You know, he's not going to score from spacing the floor. He's not going to score that much creating for himself in the post either. So if you could get Derek Favors to buy into this idea of being a center, I really like it. Just to throw a stat there as well, he's fantastic at defending shots inside of 6 feet. He allowed opponents to shoot 52% inside of 6 feet when the league average is 62.5%. So that is a differential of negative 10.5%, wow, which is really good at protecting the rim. To put that into perspective, I looked at all the players who defended at least 200 shots inside 6 feet, and Favors, with that differential of negative 10.5%, ranked sixth out of 136. He was behind only Paul Millsap, Kristaps Porzingis, Joel Embiid, Anthony Davis, and Pau Gasol. So he was ahead of even Rudy Gobert. So I think there's a real case to make. And I think part of it actually may be playing with Rudy Gobert that sort of helps him have that sort of stat as well. So I don't want to pretend that, you know, maybe it's not skewed a little bit because of that. Like, Rudy Gobert helps the entire defense, and that includes what Derek Favors did.
Right. And they did use two big lineups, and Igor coached him, so there was some familiarity there, and we could potentially play him, and he's used to playing with another big with Gobert. They didn't do it a lot, but they did do it, so there is a possibility there. And if DeAndre Ayton does improve his shot, then spacing concerns won't be as large. I mean, if he can space the floor, that's an interesting option.
Just to echo what you were saying earlier about Tyson Chandler, by the way, so Favors ranked 6th out of 136 there. Alex Len ranked 31st, so pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. Not the best rim protector there is, but definitely well above average. And Chandler ranked 85th. So I think that definitely feeds into the thing that we were talking about, where Tyson Chandler's lost more than a few steps at this point.
The myth and of Tyson Chandler's defense.
You just don't see him really contest shots anymore. But yeah, right. So Derek Favors he's far from a perfect player. I'm willing to admit it. And again, if he is adamant on a starting role, I don't even know that this would work. But I think if Marquese Chriss or Dragan Bender started at the four, and Derek Favors still got his 25 to 30 minutes a game backing both them and DeAndre Ayton up, and you just forget about Tyson Chandler. I mean, on a winning team, I don't think he really gets many minutes at all anymore. I think that could be pretty good.
And who is the player that you don't want?
See, that's more tough. I think if I could choose one player, it'd still be Aaron Gordon. We already talked about him.
Interesting.
Not willing to really throw out that money as well. The other guy that I'm wary of is Trevor Ariza. And that is just mostly dependent on the idea of him wanting this report that he maybe wants a 4-year deal worth between 50 to 60 million, because that's exactly the type of deal that we gave Tyson Chandler that I talked about. I don't want to tie up that sort of long-term money in old players like Trevor Ariza, who just turned 33. If we could get Trevor Ariza on a 1 or 2 year deal, I'd be much more open. But a 4-year deal would terrify me.
Well, I love this because we can disagree here. And the reason I say that is because one of the players I really like as a fit is Trevor Ariza. Now, Trevor Ariza, he's a veteran. He's 32. He's not super old, but he's not on the timeline, if you will. He's not on the Suns timeline at all. He's a great shooter, an excellent defender, and an undersized-ish power forward that is willing to play the power forward. Sometimes it's hard to find a player at Trevor Ariza's size. It seems like all the stars that are small forwards all want to play small forward. You can think about even Paul George wanting to play shooting guard. He just doesn't want to play power forward in any way. Someone like Trevor Ariza is a willing power forward, a great defender, a great shooter. And here's the other part too. I do agree with you, long-term money. I think $12.5 million, if he does get $50 million, is not actually an overpay for what Trevor Ariza could do, depending on how healthy he stays over the next 4 years. But I wouldn't want to do that either. One thing that I would love to pitch to him, if I were McDonough, would be a J.J. Redick-type deal that he received in Philadelphia, where he's overpaid for 1 year in order to prove his worth. And then because he's such a good fit in the starting lineup, stretches the floor, plays really good defense, he's another one of those guys like, you know, Mikal Bridges can learn from, because Mikal Bridges is kind of in the Trevor Ariza mold. And he fits right in the lineup. The Suns can kind of prove how good they can be with a player like Trevor Ariza, a championship caliber player, someone who won a championship with the Lakers and then was just in the Western Conference Finals with the Rockets. He fits right in. He played with James Harden, another player that, you know, we look at sort of as a comp for Devin Booker. Obviously, they're a little different, but adding some of those James Harden skills is something that would really benefit Devin Booker, and seeing them play next to each other. So maybe a $20 million one-year deal, if we're able to create the cap space, could actually be something that I would be willing to do for someone like Trevor Ariza. One, it secures our cap space long-term, right? We don't have any long-term money. And two, we sign a player that's kind of a perfect fit basketball-wise onto this team. Maybe a little older, like J.J. Redick, compared to the process. In fact, I think they're about the same age.
It sounds exactly like the J.J. Redick signing for Philly last year is what you're advocating for.
Yes, and I could see something like that really working out in the Suns' favor, because next year there are some free agents that could be really good. And if we can see how good the Suns can be with the perfect fit in there, maybe that cap space becomes more valuable to us, especially if we can get rid of someone like Brandon Knight, who's still on still on signed next season. Clear cap space by getting rid of Brandon Knight. Maybe the Nets want him. You know, the Nets is kind of the dumping ground for players that didn't work out.
Both for players that didn't work and, yeah.
So maybe the Nets will want him.
And New York's garbage.
And, you know, with Trevor Ariza, I just feel like he is the type of mentor that can really help the Suns. And I agree with your fear. $60 million over 4 years for a 32-year-old, that's kind of insane. There's not a lot of cap space this year, though. So maybe we can convince him on saying, hey, we'll give you a little extra money. Now, there's no reason to think McDonough would do this, and we would have to clear extra cap space to do it and still get a point guard, which is likely in all of the scenarios we're talking about. So there's some machinations that make it very difficult, but most of what we're talking about can be difficult. I can see it, though. I can envision it, and I think it would actually be pretty good.
I could see it. I mean, a one-year $20 million to Trevor Ariza, if you were talking about that, sort of kills our ability to go get that point guard, unless, again, we offload Dudley or Chandler somewhere, or wave and stretch them, which it sounds like you absolutely wouldn't want to do, because the entire point of it would be to create long-term cap flexibility. I can kind of get behind this idea. One thing that still worries me a little bit, Trevor Ariza averaged a career low, like 5 rebounds per 36 this year. He can play power forward, but like I said, we're losing Alex Len. Alex Len's a really strong rebounder. And so then if you throw Trevor Ariza into the mix at the power forward, a guy who I'm not actually so sure of his ability to like be a strong presence inside, obviously he would improve our floor spacing, and that's a given. I don't know. Do you see that as a problem with a fit in the roster?
Yes, partially, but also Trevor Ariza was standing 35 feet away from the basket because he played for Houston on offense at all times. So it's difficult to run in and get a rebound, any sort of offensive rebound in that case. And I guess the idea is that he would or could potentially be doing that with the Suns if he were to play here as well. And I think, you know, teams like that, they don't go for offensive rebounds. So the entire team's offensive rebound rate goes down, including Trevor Ariza's. I haven't really looked into the rebounding stats for Trevor Ariza, but I do hope that with DeAndre Ayton, maybe our rebounding won't be as big of a problem that it's been in previous years, but it remains to be seen. I think the kind of veteran leadership, the ability to stretch the floor, and the type of defense that Trevor Ariza can play and the type of players he can defend would make it worthwhile, though. I think having that kind of defense and that kind of shooting added to this team, it would be a really interesting team with all kinds of forwards who can switch next season if we had someone like him, even if it was just for 1 year. And it keeps our cap space open now. All right, I want to switch over to who I don't want, and forgive me for this, but it's Jabari Parker, and it's really only because of injury concerns. I do think Jabari Parker can be a good fit, but I don't think it's worth tying up long-term money for a player who might not play that much. And the other thing is his shooting, I don't know that I believe in it. And maybe part of it is the fact that he's been compared so much to Carmelo Anthony at his peak. So that kind of scares me a little bit. And I know it's just basketball related. Carmelo Anthony has weird attitude problems, but his basketball has disappeared in the last year or two. I just don't think it's worth the risk.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, certainly.
All right. So now, actually, you know what? Let's try and make a little prediction here. Who do you think is the most likely player? Just pick one, guard or power forward, that the Suns actually sign out of this group.
We lost Alex Len. Derek Favors has the Igor connection. We need a big. I think Derek Favors is a really likely, realistic signing for the Suns. And, you know, that's why I say I'd prefer he play center, because if he plays power forward, I don't know how well it would actually work. But I can just see us throwing money at him.
All right, you're not going to like this.
Don't say Marcus Smart.
I think it's Marcus Smart.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have some pretty heated discussions in about a week if it's Marcus Smart.
I'm trying to sell myself on it. But I think that that connection with McDonough, we've seen time and time again that Celtics connection matters. He values players from there. And, you know, I think that there's a strong possibility we at least make an offer. There's still a chance that he's important to Boston. I do think he is important to Boston. So there's a chance that they match anything that he's offered and just go over the cap to keep him. But I don't know. I think that that's the most likely player. All right. So that's it for today. Do you have anything else you want to cover?
Nope, that's about it. I mean, I'm sure the rumors are going to start swirling
exactly
over the next several days. So we'll probably have another episode out before free agency even starts to recap any rumors that are going on surrounding the Suns.
I think that's true. And I think we can go into a little more of what these players could actually get paid, because we didn't even really have time to see how they can fit. And some rumors will narrow down who they are. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, subscribe, and thank you for listening.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.